Canada.
Was
then.
Seattle.
He was gone.
27 carries, 122 yards, and two touchdowns. And there is a very noteworthy scene on the sideline that got caught mic'd up, where Mike Tomlin, while his back is having a phenomenal game, said, "Don't get conservative. Pass the ball to seal the deal."
He had seven games of more than 65 rushing yards last year. And admittedly, the line was not very good. I admit that. I still don't think there's enough projectable there where I'm thinking to myself, oh, if the line gets better, let's pay the running back. If anything, you go the opposite direction.
If the line gets better, anybody should be able to run behind
right.
it. Right. If your line starts to look like what you think it can look like because it's Seumalo, Frazier, Daniels in the interior, and then it's Fautanu and Jones on the outside, and now you've got a pair of first-round picks you drafted, a second-round pick, a guy that his former teammates called like one of the smartest and best guards in the league in Seumalo, and a guy I think in Daniels who honestly, if he's your worst lineman in a line of five, is a pretty good line. If that's your line, you should be able to plug an Isaiah Pacheco-type guy in there. You should be able to plug an undrafted free agent in there.
When was the last time you think an all-pro running back won the Super Bowl?
An all-pro?
Yep.
Like a first-team all-pro?
An all-pro running back.
Was Lynch 1-13?
Nope.
All right, hold on. I'm going to actually try to answer this honestly.
All-pro running back.
I know. I'm going back to the Super Bowl champions.
Are you saying all-pro at the time that they won?
Like he was
yes.
an all-pro that year?
That year.
Can I take a guess?
Go ahead.
I'm going to guess like Terrell
I
Davis.
Have one. I would have
That's
said,
a good one, but there's one more recent than
I
that.
I said Jamal Lewis in 2000.
No. Your guys are both close, though. Marshall Faulk, 1999.
Okay, greatest show on turf, yeah. But what was Marshall Faulk? Was he a 4 yards in a cloud of dust guy? He was a wide receiver and a running back in one.
My point is, when Cam calls in and says, "I don't get why the running back position has been devalued," it's because it's been borne out over a very long period of time. Great running backs are not winning championships. I read the list of the last 10 Super Bowl champions. LeGarrette Blount, Sony Michel, and Isaiah Pacheco were the starting running backs on teams that won multiple Super Bowls during that time span. The best running back on a Super Bowl winning team in the last decade might be Pacheco. I mean, that's just how...
I think it's probably Blount, actually, which is insane. But it's either one of those two guys, and didn't Blount go undrafted because of the punch?
I believe he did, yes.
I think he's a more talented guy than that.
And now
but...
he's selling weed, and every time I see him at... legally. And now
Isn't
every
it
time
called LeGarrette's Blount?
And now every time I see him at the Super Bowl, he could not be nicer in person. Here's one of our regulars. Lou is on the fan. Hello, Lou.
Hey, guys. Real quick, I didn't get a chance to tell you about the draft, but, I mean, I absolutely 100% loved this draft. This is probably the best draft they've had in 30 years. I mean, I am super excited for the guys that they picked.
Yeah, so now a lot of our listeners think Omar Khan had a great draft, took stupid pills when making this Najee Harris decision.
Absolutely not. It's the exact
draft
opposite.
And went nuts.
Exact opposite. You guys are completely right in everything you just said. As I was on hold, I was listening to you. It shows me a few different things. One, that Mike Tomlin's juice in the organization perhaps isn't as powerful as it used to be because, you know, that was his boy, Najee. There's no way he made that call, which I love. Two, that the value of the running back is spot on. You guys are 100% right. It doesn't make any sense. And I put it to this analogy. Two things. I went nuts last year. People were like, "What are you worried about? It's Mitch Trubisky." I went crazy when they gave that guy $8 million. Why? It's not because of the $8 million to his name. It's where you could put the funds in better places to make the team better. The production you got right. from Trubisky for $8 million made no sense. And the production you get from Najee Harris makes no sense. You can get anybody in there to do what he does. And the 1,000-yard rushes a year, like you said, Chris, a 17-game season, it makes no sense. It was 80 or 70 yards a game? I would be less
50,
than that.
No. It's not. No, it's 58 yards a game.
Oh, it's horrendous. You can get somebody off the street to do that.
Season.
I'm going to make you guys laugh before you cut me off. Pretty cool thing I heard earlier. And I laughed at first, and I was like, "Wow, I'm going to see if these guys, what these guys think." Give me an analogy in the Pittsburgh sports scene right now, coaching-wise, that is equal to their tenure. And I heard it from somebody on the radio earlier this morning. And you know what the answer is? A Supreme Court justice. They simply don't. It's pure tenure. Look at the three coaches you got in that city right now, starting with my man, Mr. Tomlin. the guy on Pittsburgh, the Penguins, and the manager in your baseball team. Nobody gets fired and nobody wins.
Yeah, no one's won a playoff series here since what, 2018? Is the last time happened when the Penguins beat the Flyers in the first round of the playoffs? I actually have a more charitable view of Tomlin right now than
I thought
Lou.
But I thought Lou would, because I think you're right to say that Tomlin did not react kindly to Harris's remarks, and that's part of the reason Najee didn't get this money picked up for 2025.
Well, and also you could tell from when the season started and Harris wasn't a captain, and then the amount of playing time that Jaylen Warren got, that Tomlin's view of Najee had been altered. It was not what it was.
I know
the season before.
I also know Lou is a big Tomlin is the emperor and bosses people around, but I think now with one draft last year, we started to see that might not have been the case, and two drafts in, I think it's definitely the case. If I will say this until I die. If Mike Tomlin was the guy, you know, throwing his weight around for the draft and telling everybody who to pick, they would have picked Joey Porter Jr. at pick 17 last year. They would not have Broderick Jones. Yep. I firmly believe that.
I agree with you on that. Here is Jim next. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hey. Hello, Jim.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time. Maybe you guys can help me out. And I'm going to go back to the moves that the Falcons made with the draft and Kirk Cousins. Is it possible these teams – at first I thought maybe, you know, they talked to him about what they were going to do in the draft, but then it apparently came out that he wasn't aware and he was disappointed. So is it just possible with Omar Khan and Najee Harris and the Falcons is another example that these guys are shelling out, you know, tens and hundreds of millions of dollars? Are they just looking for these guys to perform and then get paid? It seems like recently we have to pay players to keep them happy.
I mean, running backs have always been you use them up, they're disposable, you get everything you can out of them, and then you move on. I don't know if that's where you were going with the call, but that's the direction I'm going to take it in. And remember, like,
they have very – well, hold on. In a very tangible sense, that position has less leverage than any other major offensive
remember,
position.
Remember, we legitimately had Steelers insiders telling us after they picked Najee, they're cool with it only being a one-contract thing and him not getting a second deal, because they think over 4 or 5 years, he's going to do an amazing job of ushering Ben out and paving the way for the next young quarterback.
It's very possible.
Failed on both counts,
it's very possible that two things are true. That Najee Harris, in terms of his productivity, that he ends up having 4 years here, let's say, and 4,000-yard seasons. Will anybody think that he did a good job? Like, that it was a very fruitful run, unless they win two playoff games this year and make it to, like, the conference title
game. It
goes
back to what we talk about with other guys like Edmonds. If he does that as a fourth or fifth round pick, we're fine with it. He was the 24th pick in the draft. You passed on elite offensive linemen who you needed badly to take this guy. And because you passed on those guys, the next year you were in a bind and you were like, we need to find
guys.
And you reached for dudes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Oh,
they ended up starting Dan Moore and Kendrick Green because of that. Here's Cole on the fan. Hello, Cole.
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, man. You bet.
Hey, first of all, Chris, that was the way that you put that when you talked about us taking Porter at 17 2 years ago. I never really thought about that, but you're 100% right about that. And I think that's the difference between the new – between Khan and Colbert is he has so much patience, and I think that's what I love most about him right now and how he's operating the Steelers organization. The same thing happened with Fields, too. We were super patient.
They were patient with him. You're right. They waited for that market to die up. I can tell you for a fact that there were discussions internally there in that 2023 draft, just to put a bow on it, where they loved Porter. They liked him a lot, but that they were very convinced as a brain trust and convinced Mike of this, that he would be around at pick 32 and they could have their cake and eat it too. That actually happened, as you were, though, with the rest of the
ball. Yeah, no, and it ended up working out, and you're 100% right on that. I do have a question, though, and, you know, it kind of ties into that whole point about Omar being patient. Do you think that – because I think that we're one receiver away from being – a serious playoff contender and then maybe a Super Bowl contender, depending on how the the quarterback situation plays out. But do you think, and I'm not like a cap expert, but do you think that them not signing picking up Najee's fifth year has to do with the fact that they might be trying to sign a big-time receiver?
Well, it's $6 million 2 years from now.
I mean, it would
I mean,
still,
every dollar counts. I get that.
I don't dismiss it out of hand. I think it would have raised his cap charge to be like 2.48% of their cap in 2 years if they had picked it up. But, yeah, you said it more eloquently just there. Every dollar does count. If you're trying to squeeze somebody in down the road here, hypothetically, yeah, that $6 million not being on your books is still better than the opposite.
Texas on the Edgar Snyder Associates fan text line. And one more, I'm going to make this last point. If this were $6 million for this season right now, I would have a much smaller issue with it. It's committing it to him next year after this entire season is done. We've got to go 17 weeks of a season. He might have another Liz Frank injury. He might hurt his knee. He might be other running backs that in their late 20s just fall off a cliff, and he goes from being a slightly above-average running back to a below-average one. All of that could happen. That's why I wouldn't risk it and give him the fifth-year option, and the Steelers agreed with that today. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Joined right now by Steelers insider from the Post-Gazette, Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, your knee-jerk reaction to the Steelers declining Najee Harris's fifth-year option?
Guys, I'm surprised. I thought the way that Najee was handled early in his career, made a captain in his second year, the way they've leaned on him, how durable he's been. I kind of thought it was a no-brainer, but, I guess maybe this is a sign of maybe the front office taking things out of Mike Tomlin's hands. If you look at the Philadelphia model, I think when they went to the Super Bowl, it was Miles Sanders, but Sanders wasn't the workhorse. It was Boston Scott. And I think there was even one other back involved there. So, they might want to go in a different direction here. It is a new regime. They didn't pick Najee Harris. But, my knee-jerk is I'm surprised.
Ray, how much do you think Harris might have lost support maybe from Tomlin a little bit with some of the comments after the season about needing more discipline in the locker room?
Team rules.
Yeah, team rules, things like that.
Yeah. I'm sure that, looking back on it now, that – didn't even dawn on me until you just said it. But, yeah, the stuff he said in the locker room after the Cleveland game, that I'm pretty sure that led to Matt Canada's firing. And, you could say whatever you want about Najee being right in that situation. I think a lot of the people who watch this football team agree, but there's a certain way that you go about your business in the NFL and you don't air your dirty laundry in a post-game media scrum the way he did either. So I'm sure all that stuff added up. Honestly, guys, I don't know if that played a role in this or not, but you might be right. Maybe it did.
Well, Ray, here's one other thing about you. You did mention the front office took this out of Tomlin's hands. Didn't we see a change of heart from him and how he handled running backs, given that he started actually letting Jaylen Warren have a real bite at the pie, a piece of the pie, especially last year?
Yeah, if you look at his rookie season, he had 381 touches, and that decreased in 2022. And then this past season, I think he only had 284 touches. He played 53% of the offensive snaps. Jaylen Warren played 49%. So it was pretty much an even distribution. But I still don't view that as a reason not to pick up a $7 million option on a guy who, might be able to help you win a lot of games in 2025. So, I guess we'll see how it goes. I suppose there's a way that they could still do something with Najee after the season ends, but you guys know how it goes. Once you decline this option, look what happened with Bush and Edmonds and everyone else. There's a slim chance that he'll be back after next season.
Ray, how do you expect Najee Harris to handle this?
That's a good question. He's not exactly a guy who's very fuzzy with the media. He's been outspoken before on running back contracts in the NFL. He's a guy who's been very vocal about it despite his age and his lack of experience. So he's kind of taken on that mantle. And, I don't suspect that that it's going to be an easy road for the Steelers. But in the end, you know, the Steelers will handle this in a professional manner. They'll do the best that they can. And, you know, I think the expectation is that Najee Harris will do the same, you know, behind closed doors. I don't know what's going to go down, but by the time the season gets here, you would hope this wouldn't be an issue. You know, I can remember the Le'Veon Bell stuff. I mean, a little bit of a different situation, but Bell didn't feel like he was being respected by the team. If you're Najee Harris, I don't know how you have any other feelings but that when they decline your option like this. So I'm sure it'll be difficult here for the next couple weeks or months, but, by September, I don't think it'll be an issue going into the season.
Ray, it's been now the second year on the job, let's call it, for Omar Khan. Are you surprised, or how surprised are you at the pace at which he has started to do things his own way, given that he was somebody who came from internally? You know, he wasn't an outside option. He has certainly gone about building this roster much differently than his predecessor has, and it's made for a very interesting couple of years, frankly, for people in our business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of these moves, quite honestly, is because of what happened at the end of Kevin Colbert's tenure. You know, you had the COVID year. Things were screwed up financially across the league. They couldn't really address their offensive line then, but now they're addressing it, and they're getting back to a way that they want to play football here in Pittsburgh. And I would imagine that's an Omar and Andy thing, but you guys also know that, you know, the way Art Rooney talks about the running game, after every single season, he believes in the running game too. So this is an edict from up top. And, you know, what they did in the draft this year, getting three offensive linemen, two of which are probably going to be starters. You rid yourself of a guy in Deontay Johnson who had overstayed his welcome. Production-wise, you're not in the same place, but I think character-wise, you know, you think maybe you got better with the addition of Roman Wilson. So, yeah, it's been sort of a 180 here in the last 2 years since he took over, and I don't think they're done. They still have to rebuild this defensive line. This defensive back room is very much in flux. So even though there are expectations here that they're going to win some playoff games this coming season, I don't think Omar's job in terms of retooling this roster is I don't think it's over by I still think there's a ways to go here.
Ray, I want to make sure I heard you right with your first answer. It sounds to me like you think this was a mistake, declining the fifth-year option. Is that fair?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a mistake, but once you invest a first-round pick in a running back, the option is so cheap by NFL standards that you would think you would just ride it out and get as much out of that guy as you can before you move on to another running back. So, but, you know, clearly they believe in a different approach here. I don't know that Jaylen Warren is going to be more involved, but maybe they just want to get on with Jaylen Warren being this team's feature back, and then they'll worry about.
I mean, I look at Ray, sorry to jump in here and interrupt, yeah. But like, I just look at the way Dulac wrote the story on this, and it sounds to me like he is under the impression that Arthur Smith is very much not sure, or the jury is out on how he views Najee Harris. I read that like he's not even sure he wants him to be his lead back or primary back. That's how I took it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll find out. It is his offense. He's going to run it how he runs it. Obviously, Mike Tomlin is going to have final say. So we'll see where that goes. I think Jaylen Warren is a very talented running back. I think he has number one potential. He just hasn't done it yet. So, listen, if the roles are reversed, how much different is it going to be? You know, I mean, Jaylen gets a few more carries and a few more touches, and Najee is a little bit more in the shadows in his final year here. I still think they're going to do a back by committee. I think Harris is too talented not to use him. But, listen, if he wants Jaylen Warren as his number one, he's running this offense, and, you know, he can make that happen if he wants.
to piggyback with what Andrew just said, though, Ray, I do think it's interesting that if Arthur Smith is uncertain about whether he wants Najee Harris to be the lead dog, that just says something pretty loud to me, because when Arthur Smith had his greatest success as a play caller, he had a running back who physically, at the very least, strongly resembled Najee Harris in terms of size, build, stature, all of that stuff.
You are right in that assessment, Chris. I will also say Jaylen Warren, despite his size, is a very physical runner too. So I still think you can accomplish the same types of things with Jaylen Warren. I'm just really curious about what that running backs room is going to look like in 2025. Now, I suppose it's such a, you know, the way teams cycle through running backs, it could be somebody in next year's draft or even undrafted free agent class, but they invested so much in Najee. And again, I know it's different regimes. It's just a little bit odd to me that that they're moving on from him so quickly. It appears.
Ray Fittipaldo, Post Gazette. Yep, Steelers insider. Ray, thanks for coming on with us. We appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
I just don't like the sunk cost fallacy argument. Because they used a first-round pick and the guy hasn't been horrible, they're, like, obligated to continue the relationship with him. It, to me, it's like the enemy of great is good. It's like they're just accepting. The expectation is they would be more willing to accept what he's done so far because of what their initial
read on him was. Yeah. Like, well, he is a three years of 1,000-yard plus, and we draft him in the first round. Boom, let's pick that up.
If you approach it that way, you never get to a situation this past season where Jaylen Warren eats into Najee Harris's playing time as much as
it might be more comfortable to just go sunk cost fallacy. It's a little uncomfortable, maybe, to say we're not picking this up. That certainly doesn't mean, in my opinion, that it's the wrong move. Quite the opposite.
All right, it's time for Total Request Thursday. You guys want us to continue our conversation about the Steelers declining Najee Harris's fifth-year option, so we'll do that, and we'll open up the phone lines at 412-928-9370. Ray made this point, and I just don't agree with it, that he thought the Steelers would pick up the option in part because it's not that expensive. It's not like the $25 million option that they had to make a decision on with Justin Fields, and there is no discussion or debate on that. You just don't do it because he's not a $25 million quarterback. And he's saying $6 million is not really an expensive proposition. Well, we're at the casino right now, Chris. I look at this situation in this manner. If you went up to the bar and you wanted a light beer, and they said it's $10, would you do it?
No.
No.
No, 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 no. No, 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 no.
Right?
Yeah, would not do that.
Would you consider $10 to be a lot of money?
For a light beer?
No, just in general.
No.
Okay, so there you go. Like, you make, just because something in Chris's entire
just because it's a small amount of money overall in the grand scheme of things doesn't mean I would still spend it on something I didn't otherwise want.
Yeah, exactly. So just because you have this, you know, finite amount of money that you have, and it's way more than just $10.
Oh, and it is finite, brother.
That doesn't excuse.
You don't automatically just throw it away on something you don't think is worth $10.
Yeah, the majority of teams don't spend that amount of money on a running back. So why would you overpay unless you thought the player that you had was really good and worth it? Crowley made a good point. He said on Twitter, I don't want to guarantee a contract to someone 2 years from now who's just average.
He doesn't pay average players.
And you're not paying him average salary. Average salary for a running back is like $4 million. You're paying more than the average salary for him.
That
starting running back salary.
That is correct. So Josh Carney, who is my editor, in addition to working over at Steelers Depot.
And liked the show, but I'm guessing he disagrees with us on it and now hates us.
He's not somebody who's like over the top about this and foaming at the mouth by any stretch. He thought it just was like the price was right for him personally. He thought it was fine. Dump him after 2025 and be done with it. You got 5 years out of him. And somebody responded to him and said, no team in existence pays over $7 million a year for an older, slow running back. And then he listed guys who were going to make more than that this year. Henry, Jacobs, Mixon, Connor, Jones, and Kamara. That does, just because those guys are making that doesn't make any of those good contracts.
Right.
I think Derrick Henry's, at worst, the second-best running back of his little generation here post-Peterson. And I think he might be good on the Ravens because they have such a unique running game with Jackson there. That doesn't mean that in a vacuum I think Derrick Henry's worth $8 million a year.
It's also
Josh Jacobs at $12 million a year,
yeah,
not great.
I don't
Joe
like
Mixon
contract.
At 9.875
like
is atrocious.
I don't like that one either.
Kamara at 15 is
that.
Wild. That so like I know he's
gonna,
just
I'm also going to spend $8 million by the way on a guy who's a transcendent running back and take my chances with him.
Sure, yes. That you might catch lightning in a bottle in your system, but my point is, just because Josh correctly points out those are some bad contracts doesn't make it defensible to sign to pick up the option on Harris. It means they're all bad contracts.
That's like that to me is like the old-fashioned, you know, your friend told you to jump off a bridge. Does that mean you're going to do it?
Because, my dad loved that
just
one.
Because other people are making crappy-ass decisions on running backs – doesn't justify you doing the same thing and making the same mistake. Your dad was a big fan of that one.
He just loved the I would always say, Dad, why can't I do blah, blah, blah? If your friends all jumped off a bridge, would you do it too? And once in a while, I'd say, yeah.
Have you used that one on Lennox yet?